Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Brody and Marjorie Egan. Airbnb, the online platform that lets strangers rent rooms or homes or in some cases a fold-out couch, is hailed as a godsend to travelers in search of cheap lodging. It's portrayed as the enemy of the hotel industry, and it's gotten unwanted attention from regulators. So in an effort to distinguish itself from the bad boy of the shared economy, namely Uber, they've launched a rebranding campaign that focuses less on the space you rent and more on the lifestyle that comes with it. They even have a new logo. It's an upside-down heart, and they call it BELO. I think it's BELO, short for belong. Here with us in Studio 3 for her take on Airbnb and their effort to rebrand themselves is Harvard historian Nancy Kane. Nancy's an historian at the Harvard Business School, where she holds the James E. Robison Chair of Business Administration. Her latest book, Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. Hello there, Nancy.
Hey there, folks.
Hello, Nancy Kane. Good to see you, as always. So I didn't know that Uber, that I've taken advantage of several times, is part of the is a bad boy of the sharing economy. But just so people are clear on this, what would you say is the sharing economy? What does that mean?
So that's a, you know, that's a very trendy and increasingly popular term used to characterize businesses that make their way off, you know, base their business model, their services or goods on the internet, basically. So Uber, we wouldn't have Uber, and we wouldn't have Airbnb, and we wouldn't, you could argue, wouldn't really have, you know, all the excitement and verve and traction of Amazon without, right, the ability to literally call a taxi, call a limo service in the case of Uber with your phone, or connect with, you know, lots and lots of people that have rooms to let or houses to let, or guess what, Airbnb lets castles, tree houses, and yurts, I learned this weekend, that have yurts to let, connect them with all the people that want, you know, space in a yurt, space in a room in New York, space in a house in the Catskills. So it's the idea that that the internet, and particularly the smartphone, which brings the internet instantly to literally billions of people, right, opens up a whole new way of connecting people that have assets with people that or have things or services that others want.
So people to brand
new
is
marketplace,
the whole notion.
People to people, yeah. Brand new marketplace, all based. And I think sharing is a euphemism. I mean, I don't know what modern day Don Draper thought of sharing economy, but it's not primarily about sharing. It's about, you know, fees, money changing hands as it has for, you know, for centuries, for millennia, in exchange for goods and services. So it's really the interconnected market, or the internet market, or the smartphone global market that really describes the kind of, you know, new and increasingly valued, right, the internet, the market value right now, the valuation on Airbnb as of its most recent fundraising efforts. They raised in April $450 million from Texas Pacific Group, a big venture capital company or private equity company that invests in consumer businesses. Their valuation was $10 billion.
And their new motto should be regulators be damned. I mean, that's another, that really is another theme here. We're talking to Nancy Kane from Harvard Business School. I have to say, but I think I'm the only one in the room who's actually done Airbnb.
You are the only one.
And it's great. I should say, I mean, you go online, if you haven't done it before, and you search a city, you put in criteria, how many bedrooms, you're going to have kids, you're not, whatever kind of thing, you have smoking, non, you know, sort of like you do in a hotel. Mm-hmm. And then you get to see photographs, you make direct contact, okay, with the individual who owns the apartment and that sort of thing. And it's a bit of a crapshoot, except their ratings, a la Yelp and
this
whatever.
This is really important.
Yeah, and so not only is the provider of the space, yep, rated after he or she obviously has rented a few times, but also the renter,
right,
which obviously is huge, right?
Right. So again, dear listeners, think about this. You, and this is really true. This is exactly true for Uber. So if we think about the sharing economy, or the, you know, the wired economy, however you want to characterize these goods and services. By the way, Yelp is a great example of a sharing economy service, right?
That's right.
You connect people that have used this service with people that want to know about what that service is like, or that store, et cetera. So, you know, a very important aspect of literally people to people, as Jim said so acutely or so accurately, is who's going to tell you whether it's one, a decent room or yurt or treehouse or
yurt,
you know, smoke-free apartment, and then if you're a landlord, or if you're someone who rents an apartment and effectively wants to sublet it to an Airbnb customer, then how do you know that your guest isn't going to trash it? Ditto. Ditto with Uber. How do you know, right, that the driver who picks you up, who P.S. is are mostly limo drivers that are on their off time when they don't have when they're not giving rides or picking up people for their employer, right? How do you know that that car is clean? How do you know that car is on time? How do you know that the driver is trustworthy? Well, you immediately rate them. You're required to rate them. And the and so the customers and the landlords or the drivers and the users of Uber in effect become the sanctioning service or the sanctioning body that, say, a hotel would have been, right, or a limo company would have been in the more traditional economy. So the brilliant, you know, kind of, if you will, the brilliant innovation of putting people together and ensuring to some degree, not completely, that, that buyers and sellers, you know, work together well in at a decent at a you know a level of decency in terms of operation and services provided and you know and money rendered is provided by this rating system that's really important.
Yeah, we're talking to Nancy Kane about Airbnb in particular, but what is called, and I'm not crazy about the term either, the sharing economy. You know, one of the things I don't like, I mean, obviously they vetted this thing, and you say there's tons of new investment in Airbnb, but this whole notion that they're now focused on the experience rather than the thing, you know, this symbol, it's a symbol of belonging.
Come on, you're having a cup of tea with the landlord on the couch. That I mean, they have this little warm and cozy thing. I think that is kind of baloney, actually.
Why are they doing that?
I'm not interested in kumbaya with the landlord.
Well, right, and you know, and it's interesting, the Boston Globe ran a pretty interesting story about this, you know, a week or so ago, and they interviewed Boston landlords, women and men, couples and singles who are making money. In one case, a woman had made $23,000 last year, right?
Her.
I think she was a nurse, and she could take a shift or two off her you know to-do list at the hospital because she now had this source of income. And she was just, you know, some of these people were describing, well, I like to buy chocolates and I like to buy little things for the room. You know, again, that is completely left to the discretion of the guest and the landlord. I'm sure there are guests that like to, you know, treat it like a bed and breakfast and have a good old chat with a landlord. And some of the landlords or the service providers want to do that. And you don't have to, but you don't have to do that at all. The point is there's massive amounts of what we would call, you know, differentiation or degrees of freedom in terms of how the experience is offered and what kind of guests come in. So you can get everything, I think, from kumbaya to, you know, here's the lockbox with the key and you know, and put the key back in the lockbox when you leave. And I'm sure that's true. But again, what I think someone like Brian Chesky, the CEO of Airbnb,
would say, 11 years old, correct?
Right? Is that he's 32 years old.
Oh, sorry,
he and a couple of gentlemen founded this company in, depending on who you read and how you when you want to what constitutes founding in your book, 2007 or 2008 in San Francisco, when they couldn't find a place to stay for a big design convention and got this idea.
Is that what started? Is that how it started?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They
I knew
couldn't.
The year,
there's
I didn't
got
know
to be a better way.
That's
they
great.
Stand there and talk about this because there's not a hotel room in San Francisco to be had. So. You know, one of the things they would tell you is that there's something for everything when you can connect this many people.
Well,
but I want to go back to the rebranding.
Well, go ahead,
Can I? Because
absolutely.
The rebranding is really interesting, including all the reaction that their new upside down heart, which looks like a twisted paper clip or an IUD, depending on your
That's
perspective.
That's what some are saying.
Right. You know, it's interesting to think about what's going on here because they launched this rebranding campaign. Very Dan Draper. We're in the business. It reminded me of that famous scene in Mad Men when he's talking. Don Draper. When he's talking about, forgive me, dear listeners, when he's talking about the Kodak carousel slide projector. It's one of the best television segments I've ever seen. And he comes up with this great idea that we are in the business of making memories. Well, gosh darn it, if Airbnb folks didn't go right back to that last week when they were talking about making memories, community, lifestyle. So my sense is that very little has changed about the offerings and the business that Airbnb is in. A lot has changed about the advertising and the way they're describing it, including the logo. And I think this is a play as much directed at regulators. It's a, you know, it's a communication strategy as much directed at regulators and the general public's orientation, perspective on, opinion of, feeling for Airbnb, because the really interesting story on the regulatory front with businesses like Uber and Airbnb, which are, in a sense, too new to fit perfectly into established legal and regulatory categories, as, P.S., Standard Oil was when it got going in 1890, and we had to create legislation kind of retrofitting that onto Standard Oil. The law always lags. One of the most interesting things here, the fundamental issue here, is how these new businesses are very strategically using the bully pulpit and the connection of the internet to get people to besiege regulators with, you know, protests against regulating Airbnb. They are literally doing that in strategic forms, in group forums. And the idea is somehow our services are so great, what we're doing is so new that we don't need to be and don't deserve to be and don't legally conform with established regulations. So that is really interesting, and that's new.
We're talking with Nancy Kane from Harvard Business School. Explain this issue. The New York Attorney General has been after them because they're concerned about taxes and housing shortages and other things. So explain what's going on.
The most noteworthy, this is happening in lots of locations, but the most noteworthy, most newsworthy place or most news attracting place this is happening is in New York City. And the person handling it on the government side is the state attorney general, Eric Schneiderman. Sounds like a smart, reasonable guy by all the accounts I've read. He has, in a sense, his office has, in a sense, said, look, to Airbnb, you have folks, some of whom are single, you know, if you will, dwelling users or owners, right? Because your renter can sublet their space, assuming they don't have lease restrictions on that. A lot of apartment buildings have lease restrictions. Users, the folks leasing or offering the apartment or house on Airbnb, right? You have lots of those people, but you also have lots of people, right? Who are in effect becoming, you know, kind of sub landlords that have lots and lots of apartments that they are taking off the market that might be that might be used by people that need housing, including possibly affordable housing or rent controlled housing, and leasing it on Airbnb because they can make a lot more money. Right, the way the story works in terms of the money is that those folks that list their apartments or list their houses pay, I believe, between 6% and 12% of the nighttime fee to Airbnb in exchange for being on their marketplace. And the person who leases the apartment or rents the room, like Jim did, pays 3%. So Airbnb, think about what their costs are. They're very, very low. Collects this annuity stream between 6 and 12 from the person with the asset or the apartment, and then 3% from the owner. I mean, from the renter, from the vacationer, right? The argument of Schneiderman is, first of all, we don't want lots of people taking all their landlords taking their apartments off to make more money for vacationers, right? That's not good public policy, and it's not fair to people who need housing. Secondly, how do we collect, how do we regulate standards on this, right? Because hotels have to have licenses, right? Bed and breakfasts have to have licenses. So how do we ensure that we don't have rooms going out in crack houses and all the kind of things you're trying to do with licensing requirements, that the health standards are upheld? And thirdly, right, what's happening to this income? How do we, in a sense, how does the government, which the government always wants a piece of income, how does the government claim its fair share of this income?
In New York, it doesn't, as of the moment, right?
As of the moment. So, you can understand, anyone can understand why the government wants to be involved in this new, really rapidly growing, highly lucrative for both Airbnb and people that let their space, right? Why the government wants to be involved here. There is no big surprise in that.
Well, there's another piece, by the way. I don't know if you just mentioned this a minute. And by the way, just to step back for a second, because we know a decent amount about this, just to give a sense. And again, this is from one of the founders in Thomas Friedman's fawning piece in the in the weekend New York Times. One of the owners of the founders of the company says 120,000 people stayed in Brazil and Airbnb rented rooms during the World Cup. 120,000.
Yeah.
So it's all over the world. There's another piece. I don't know if you mentioned this, Nancy, because I was just looking for this little piece. The other thing a lot of attorneys general and others are worried about is if you live in an apartment building, do you want the people next door being a constant stream of people you don't know who are coming through?
Exactly.
They may be good. They may be bad. Now, on the tax front, Airbnb, it seems to me, is conceding because in a couple of cities, they've agreed to pay the hotel tax, which means they're ultimately going to pay it everywhere. But the laws are so, we talked about New York. In California, there's this woman who rented a place of hers for, I think it was a month and a half or something, the law that she was not aware of says after a month, the Airbnb customer becomes a tenant. Right. She attempted to evict him when he wasn't paying the rent. And he says, I'm a tenant. You have to go through it. So she had to hire a lawyer for thousands of dollars. She's got to go to court. The guy's not paying.
Nightmare.
It's going to. But it seems to me, I mean, that's really the story to me. The story is, to me, are all of these problems just startup problems, like with almost anything that happens that's new and different? Or is this going to be, as I said to Marty this morning, sort of like the Arab Spring, you know, huge promise and not much delivery? Like, if 10 years, if you're in our studio, are we going to remember this so-called sharing economy, Airbnb, Uber, as what spawned other giants like them? Or are we going to say, boy, that was a great time, but it didn't last?
No, I think we're going to say that, just like we say now, remember when, you know, Michael Douglas in Wall Street had this cell phone that was like a foot long and, you know, 6 inches wide. And he's walking along the beach, you know, looking for, I can't remember, it's Martin Sheen's son, right?
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen, who plays the young, malleable Gordon Gekko wannabe character. So I think it's going to be like that. We're going to say quaintly, remember when Airbnb and Uber and, you know, Lyft, which is another Uber-like service starting in New York. P.S. Those cars have big furry pink mustaches on the front to identify them, just for your, you know, trivia pleasure. We're going to say, remember when they were like trying to, you know, wave the libertarian flag and blow the trumpet that they weren't somehow subject to government, the hand of government regulation? We're going to laugh and chortle and say, wasn't that quaint? And they're going to be established players. Just like we thought Amazon was this quaint, money-losing bookseller, right? And now it is still working through regulatory issues, tax issues, where's its warehouse, where aren't its warehouses, right? And it's a big, big player. It's going to be bigger than Walmart real soon. So this is, you know, there's nothing new under the sun here. This is a new category of businesses. It is soon going to be an established category of businesses, and we won't talk about the sharing economy versus the traditional economy. Brian Chesky and the folks at Uber, you know, Travis Kalanick, are all going to be regulated.
Well, you know, it's funny. When you say all going to be regulated, it seems to me that, I mean, just like the hotels are fighting back big time because they argue they're at a competitive disadvantage.
And the taxis are fighting Uber.
Exactly. It seems to me virtually, you mentioned Walmart, I assume not in jest, virtually every, what did Thomas Friedman write in that piece, that this is, you know, the 21st century economy versus the 20th century economy, big corporations in the 20th. It seems to me almost everything could be supplanted. Almost everything that we're used to, from hotels to supermarkets to whatever, can be replaced by Airbnb kinds of things, right?
Sure, absolutely. But the creative destruction of capitalism is never so, you know, so clean and neat. I think we're going to increasingly live in an economy in which we consume goods and services through our phones and on the internet. But restaurants aren't going away.
Neither are hotels.
So what happens is Marriott.
A lot of people do not want to take a chance on going to somebody else's apartment. They want to know they're in the hotel and they can call the front desk.
Absolutely.
And
you think most business travelers who have to fight, right, the steerage at 30,000 feet in commercial airspace are going to say, hey, to their assistants, hook me up with an apartment?
No, they're not.
They're just not going to do it. Business travel is way too hard for that.
But you know what I think is another fascinating thing? You kind of touched on it, that when the New York Attorney General came down on Airbnb and said we need records from 15,000 people, subpoenas and all this kind of stuff and then there was the pushback online. And I think you see this now with this change.org where people were objecting and saying, that's crazy. And of course, the judge threw out the 15,000 there. And
well, what
down.
The judge said is, you don't have to give names for privacy reasons, but you got to turn over the data. And Airbnb did.
Yeah.
Right.
But I guess the thing is, people being able to go online to protest
so that's,
is kind of a
that,
neat new thing
totally,
as well.
Totally. And that's my point, that under the libertarian flag, we are different. We are micro-entrepreneurs, says Brian Chesky. And so therefore, somehow we're different and we don't need to be like subject to the law or the tax code. You'll forgive my chortle, but that is, God bless, you know, Don Draper. That's just way too far a stretch to have any kind of, you know,
but that is, but Nancy, it's fitting. And when you say limited relationship to reality, I think it's a perfect relationship to reality. I think this country, is so much more libertarian in many Democrats, Republicans, whatever, than they were ages ago. We don't want government. I mean, the ads, for example, where are they on the subways? The way Airbnb is fighting back, New Yorkers should be able to rent out their own homes. I mean, that's a very libertarian, yeah, so, very appealing sort of message, meaning the attorney general shouldn't be able to tell you
exactly
what you do with your property, right?
So I hear you. So again, you can't blame, you know, Chesky or Kalanick at Uber. You can't blame them for waving the same flag that has gotten created their businesses and made them so big, which is this people to people, right? In this case, Airbnb to their customers, mm-hmm, or their landlords, right? Uber to the people that use it and to their limo drivers. You can't blame them for fighting back against government regulation. P.S. Business has been fighting government regulation since, you know, we were taxing wine moving on big sailing ships from Madeira, and you know, hundreds of years ago. So there's again nothing new under the sun. But here's the real issue, and you both make a great point about, come on, shouldn't we be free to do this? Look, there's a reason, and a good reason, from a lot of the regulation that Uber and Airbnb are fighting.
Oh, I totally agree with you. I wasn't disagreeing with you.
And it's the very presence of that regulation, right, including how clean Marriott hotel rooms,
yep,
are, right, or Fairfield Inns or any Courtyards by Marriott.
Love them.
Right? There's a reason. That those things are in place, and there's a reason those hotels are so clean, and those are not unrelated. So government has always performed put in place a whole bunch of stuff for good reason. Is it efficiently done? Does it get tiring? Is it too much? Are we lacking anyone on the public stage to explain to us why these things are in place? You know, yes, yes, and yes. But that doesn't change the fundamental truth, which is we don't really want to live in a society without health codes. We don't really want to live in a society without the SEC. We don't really want to live in a society that has no renters' rights laws. We don't really want a society that has no small claims court. Society, right, would devolve in a Hobbesian way to all kinds of costs and behaviors that we would rather not deal with. And I say that euphemistically.
No, Nancy, well, I totally agree with you. I have to say my bottom line is I just want to belong. That's essentially...
There you go. God bless you. Brian Chesky loves you.
Here's my bottom line. When I go to a hotel, I don't want any surprises. No surprises. Nancy Kane, as always, great to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming in. Nancy Kane is an historian at the Harvard Business School, where she holds the James E. Robeson Chair of Business Administration. Her latest book is Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. Okay, up next, we're going to ask you about Airbnb. Is this the answer to affordable lodging, or is this the answer to circumventing the law? Is this room and board enterprise above board or not? That's next on 89.7 WGBH.
And before we go away, just want to remember, in September, mid-September, this show goes to 3 hours, 11 to 2. And for another trial run, tomorrow we're on 11 to 2, the 11 o'clock hour, only online at WGBHnews.org. 11 to 12, Charlie Sennett on international stuff. Art Kaplan talks about soaring costs of generic drugs. Sue O'Connell on open mic, 11 to 12, online only, streaming WGBHnews.org. 12 to 2, our usual place, 89.7 on the radio. Airbnb talk right after this.